We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Live from the Edmore Sawgrass Cadillac Studios, Morse has more. Visit EdmoreSawgrass.com. This is the Alex Dano Show on Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM, 96.5 FM HD2, and online at WQAM.com.
Yes!
Oh, it is.
It is the Alex Dano Show here on Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM. Streaming online, WQAM.com on your computer, on your smartphone, the TuneIn Radio app, or the Radio.com app, however you listen. We appreciate your patronage here tonight. I just received a link from Mark Hochman, because he was talking about this on his show, brought me in to talk about it. Can you pull up, Tito, the John Sterling call where he mixed in some like really butchered like pig Latin Italian onto Giancarlo Stanton's home runs? Because Hochman sends me this link. John Sterling, who I think, you know, very shticky, but if you're a baseball fan, John Sterling is iconic. His home run calls, the old, an A-bomb from A-Rod. I mean, it's like you, like a 30-year-old broadcaster couldn't do what he does, but since he's 70, like his shtick is grandfathered in. You know, he's like, he's got a place in history as a famed baseball announcer. So he has these little shticky home run calls. And, you know, since Stanton is new to the club, he came up with something for Giancarlo and his really broken Italian. Although, like, let me point out the elephant in the room. Giancarlo is an Italian name. In fact, that's my son's middle name. Probably should have mentioned that. My middle name, my son Luca's middle name. But Giancarlo Stanton, not Italian. I think maybe he's got some Italian heritage somewhere down the line, but he's like Puerto Rican. Like, he's not Italian, yet Sterling has decided to incorporate broken Italian into this home run call. And according to the New York Post, he says, Sterling says he will continue to use his Italian call when Stanton hits a home run. I kind of like it, said Sterling. Nobody else agrees with that, but Sterling says, I kind of like it. I think people will grow to like it. So do you have that, Tito? Can we play back John Sterling?
So just a clarification, Giancarlo Stanton is of African-American and Irish descent.
Okay.
And his grandmother is Puerto Rican.
So there's no Italian to speak of whatsoever.
Zero.
So I guess like his parents just decided, Giancarlo, cool name, let's go with that for your name. Okay. So here is John Sterling, not exactly hitting this call out of the park.
Swung on and drilled to deep right center field. It is high. It is far. It is gone. It is first Yankee at bat. Giancarlo. Non si può stopparlo. It is a Stantonian home run. A two-run blast to right center in his first Yankee at bat. And the Yankees take a 2-0 lead.
Now, what really threw me off there, because I speak some Italian, is like stopparlo, not a word. Like, that's what threw me off. Apparently, Sterling just made that up. Fermarlo is the word that he was looking for, but stopparlo became the word. That's not a word, but I guess he thought that that would sound better. So, man, I mean, listen, if you don't like that home run call, you better get used to it, because with the lineup protection Stanton's got there, he's probably going to hit, like, 55 jacks this year. So you're going to have to hear this 55 times. Sorry, I threw you a curveball on that one. You'll have to hear this 55
swung
times.
Swung on and drilled to deep right center field. It is high. It is far. It is gone. It is first Yankee at bat. Giancarlo. Non si può stopparlo. It is a Stantonian home run. A two-run blast to right center in his first Yankee at bat. And the Yankees take a 2-0 lead.
You can't stop him is what he said in pig Latin. That was solid.
Feels so forced.
It does. Marlins, by the way, playing the second of their three-game set with the Cubs tonight, Marlins Park, 1-1. top of the fourth inning. So, hey, the Marlins are not losing, right? They didn't give up a home run on the first pitch like they did yesterday. This very interesting, though. Clark Spencer filed this to the Miami Herald 48 minutes ago. You'll love this. This is so Marlins. You'll love this, or you'll hate it, depending on your views on the club. Clark Spencer writes, the Marlins are spending more money on players who aren't on their current 25-man roster than on those who are. On the team's $100 million payroll, or the team's $100 million payroll, is the third highest in franchise history. Only last season's $115 million payroll and the $101 million figure from 2012 rank higher. But more than half of it, $52 million, is earmarked for players who are either on the disabled list or no longer with the club. Injured pitcher Wei-Yin Chen's contract is causing the greatest drag on payroll. Chen, who is trying to work his way back from chronic arm problems, which is not good for a pitcher, by the way, is owed $18 million in 2018, with $8 million of the total amount coming in the form of deferred signing bonus. Others on the DL but still being paid include third baseman Martin Prado, $13.5 million. Starting pitcher Dan Straley, $3.37 million. Catcher JT Realmuto, is he still a Marlin? He wanted out of here so bad, $2.9 million. Shortstop JT Riddle and pitchers Eliezer Hernandez and Brett Graves, who are each earning the major league minimum salary of $545,000. The Marlins are also on the hook for the $13 million salary owed to pitcher Edinson Volquez, who was released in December. Meanwhile, 13 of the Marlins' 25 players are being paid the $545,000 minimum, $545,000 minimum. Two others are earning less than $580,000. That leaves only 10 players making at least $1 million. The largest paychecks are being written for second baseman Starlin Castro, $10 million, closer Brad Ziegler, $9 million, reliever Junichi Tozawa, $7 million. So there you have it. That's so Marlins. Actually paying more money, $52 million, to players who don't currently or no longer play for the club than they are $48 million to guys who are currently on that 25-man roster. Not all of it is their fault, the Wei-Yin Chen thing, I get it. It's not all the Marlins' fault. But doesn't it just fit with that Marlins narrative that they're actually paying more money to guys who don't play for them than guys who do? Oh, man, I find that unbelievable. Omar Kelly is going to join us, by the way, in about 7 minutes to talk some Miami Dolphins. Interesting stuff relayed by Barry Jackson of the Miami Herald about some of the notable things happening at Miami Hurricanes spring practice. That, you know, Nikosi Perry doing some good stuff out there, but is still showing some limitations with the deep ball. You know, I guess for Nikosi, even though he's got a stronger throwing arm than Malik Rozier, but I guess doesn't have the touch or the command of the throws. Here's what Barry wrote in his Sports Buzz column. Quarterback Nikosi Perry has improved, but one observer said his deep ball is not as good as Malik Rozier's, even though Perry's arm is excellent. Perry sometimes spins out of trouble when he's under pressure and ends up turning his back on a play, in other words, towards his own backfield, but that can be corrected. And there has been overall growth in his game. He's playing more relaxed. That's good. Quote, it seems like some first-year quarterbacks, they're not vocal because they don't want to say the wrong thing, center Tyler Gauthier said last week. Now you can tell he's more assertive. He's going to walk in there and he wants eyes and ears on him in the huddle. He's going to make a play call and we're going to run it, and that's the way it's going to be. It's definitely good to see him step up as a leader like that. Now, I read between the lines on that. That is something that Malik Rozier is lacking, or at least was lacking. And I don't know if leadership is something that can really be drastically changed going from your junior year to your senior year, as it can be going from your true freshman year to your redshirt freshman year. So for Malik Rozier, and, you know, this was a big topic 2 weeks ago when he spoke on this, when spring ball began, that he needs to address his own urgency, that Mark Richt even told him, I can't have you giving me 75% ever. Like, you need to be assertive and feel the urgency every time. Like, you can't go out there like you did against the Pitt Panthers on the road and, you know, never have really gotten off the plane and have to get benched in the fourth quarter. Like, that can't be the way you go out there and play if you're going to be the starting quarterback at the U. and he's got to be more vocal and assertive in the huddle. And I'm sure that's something he's working on. I'm sure that's something he's mentally addressing. But I imagine it's very tough to dramatically change that about yourself after a full year as a starter, going from your junior to your senior year. Whereas you hear about Nikosi Perry as, you know, a 19-year-old redshirt freshman doing a nice job having command of the huddle and being assertive, probably a sign he's more of a natural leader. And for offensive linemen to bring that up, now they weren't intentionally disrespecting Malik or even bringing up his name, but if I'm reading between the lines, I'm thinking the fact that they're going out of their way to say, hey, Nikosi Perry is doing a really good job in the huddle, they may be pointing out something that was lacking a little bit in the huddle a year ago. So that's something to keep your eyes on, because that's going to be one of the factors that decides the starting quarterback at the U. It's going to come down to experience is going to give Malik an edge, no question, right? The fact that Mark Richt knows this guy has already been to war with us 14 times last year as a starter, and, you know, he had another start a couple of years back in that Duke game, and I know what I'm getting in Malik, and Nikosi is still a wild card for me. I think that's going to work in Malik's favor, no question about it. No question about it. Apparently, the accuracy on the deep ball is going to work in Malik's favor, at least right now. But the athleticism, arm strength, leadership, I think these are things that can work in Nikosi's favor, and it could really become a heated quarterback competition, something that maybe by the end of spring, the picture is going to get just a little bit clearer on that. All right, before we get to Omar Kelly in the next segment, let's talk to Don. You're on QAM. What's up, Don?
Hey, how are you tonight, man? Long time no talk to.
Great, man.
Hey, by the Hurricanes, I think Malik's going to lose the job. It's hard to say that for him, but I just don't think, as you spoke, that he had the leadership skills and missed way too many open guys last year. But I wanted to send me to the Dolphins real quick. Everybody keeps talking about Tannehill this, Tannehill that. I'm telling you what, if you give Tannehill an offensive line, he's going to shine.
I hope so.
I think all the moves the Dolphins have done, I think, have been productive.
And you know what? I will say this. I don't agree that all the moves have been productive, but the offensive line, yes. I do think the offensive line is going to be better next year than it was last year, better this year than it was last year. I think that they've upgraded there because as much as I appreciate Mike Pouncey, the half dozen years he spent in a Dolphins uniform, Pouncey just not the same player after all those hip issues. Like, oh, good for him. He started 16 games last year, was not the same Pro Bowl caliber guy. I think the Dolphins have upgraded.
I agree on that wholeheartedly. But if you look at Jarvis Landry, a lot of people are upset about that. What I always focus on is the yards after catch. If the guy was really open that much, I mean wide open, he would have had a lot of yards after catch, and he didn't have that. He didn't have it. So I don't think that was a great loss. You know, a lot of people are saying, well, he had 1,000 catches every year or whatever it was.
Yeah, 100 catches every year. 1,000 catches every year would be – I would definitely not want to give that guy up.
Yeah, without a doubt. But I think if they just pick up the offensive line, you know, from a level 6 to a level 9, I think we're going to be fine as long as we can fill that hole where Adamican Sue left.
Right. Yeah, I was about to say, you still have questions at D-tackle. You still have a lot of questions at linebacker. So it's not perfect, but I appreciate your optimism on the offense at the very least.
Well, it's good talking to you again, Don. I'll have a good night.
Of course. Great stuff. And you know what? I'm sure Omar's not going to pull any punches, right? Also, I want to get Omar's reaction to the talk of Derwin James. He comes up on the latest Mel Kiper mockery draft for the Miami Dolphins. We'll talk to Omar about that and so much more as he joins us next here on WQAM.
Radio.com. Radio.com.
It's Friday, gotta get down on Friday. Everybody,
so I think Tito Banak has made it his personal passion to just try and annoy the hell out of Omar Kelly and me with this song. So historically, if you listen to this radio station, you know that Omar Kelly cannot stand the song This Is How We Do It, which is like a good Friday song heading into the weekend. So Tito, just, you went full cheese. You went with Rebecca Black's Friday, which is, you know, it this song is so bad that that's why the YouTube video has like 100 billion hits, because it's so bad.
You mentioned something else that Omar doesn't like, which is, I think he doesn't like cheese, right?
No, yeah, you're right. He doesn't like cheese.
All right.
Omar Kelly joins us. Omar, which do you hate more, cheese or this song?
I have never heard that song.
Really?
So I have no idea what the heck it was. Yeah.
Here's let me give you the Cliff's Notes version of what this song is. This was like, I don't know, probably 7-8 years ago by now. The girl who I don't know if she wrote it, but the girl who sings this song was like a teenager, probably a spoiled rich teenager whose mom decided, I think my daughter is really talented, should be a superstar. So the mom paid a bunch of money to get her to record a music video, to film a music video, and probably thinking this is going to be a smash hit. She's going to be the next Justin Bieber. This is unbelievable. But the video comes out, and it turned into a viral sensation because it was so laughably bad. And I do feel bad for this girl in a way, because it was probably her mom who pushed her into it. And like, she got bullied a lot because the song and the music video were so embarrassing. But that is the story of Rebecca Black.
You know, I'm going to tell you a secret, which is probably not a very good secret.
Okay.
It's been shared on QAM by George Sedano.
Oh.
I used to do TV when I was a kid.
I do remember hearing it. What were you on? I remember hearing this vaguely years ago.
Funshine Festivals or something like that. I was hosting cartoons, or cartoons used to play when you got home. And I was one of like 10 hosts of those cartoons for Channel 33. I don't even remember what the thing is. Funshine Festival, and I used to say stupid little things and freaky facts and all that kind of stuff. The problem is, I did that when I was in third grade. It played till I was like in 10th grader in high school.
Oh, no.
And it made me very popular. I mean, it made me very popular throughout Dade County. But... you know, you don't. People made fun of you because, you're a 10th grader, and there you are as a 10-year-old talking about freaky facts. And it really got old after a while. But, yes, I can relate to people teasing you. I mean, you know I already have thick skin, so imagine.
You have to. With the tweets that you receive, you've got to have thick skin.
Yeah. Yeah, I people don't realize I'm Teflon, baby. I've been groomed since childhood.
You know, I wanted to ask you an NFL-related thing. Now, this probably doesn't directly relate to the Miami Dolphins, but maybe it will come draft day. But, you know, Omar, a lot of college players who have not declared for the NFL will get in trouble because they've already sought or hired agents. Like, a lot of guys who are in college will get in trouble for getting paid by agents. Yet you have the exact opposite happening with Lamar Jackson, who is a couple weeks away from being drafted, yet he doesn't have an agent, and some people say this could hurt his draft stock. What's going on there?
It would, without a doubt, hurts his draft stock. I'm one of those people. Here's the problem that people who do not know what the hell is going on cannot talk about and need to really shut the hell up on in regards to the subject. Most people don't understand what an agent does primarily in the draft process. You know what an agent's number one job in the draft process is?
What?
It's to put out the fires. Open the line of communication. And I'll give you a perfect example. Open the line of communication to facilitate you being in the best spot or in the best situation. I'll give you an example using David Kanter, who is a South Florida agent. He's had a number of Dolphins. He's had a number of big-time clients, including Eric Weddle. He happens to represent Terrence Fidday. I'm at the NFL owners meeting. So is a lot of agents. David's there. I'm hanging with David. David hasn't gotten a deal for Terrence today. It just hasn't happened. And so you know what David's doing there? He's networking, working, talking to, selling his client, Terrence Fidday, to the Buffalo Bills GM, Bean. And I sit there and I watch him sell his client. And I watch him get Terrence Fidday a workout the very next day.
Wow.
Up to New York. That's what an agent does. And an agent doesn't just do it for the first round pick. An agent does it for the undrafted client. Now, this young man, who I like, he's home team, his athleticism is unmatched. It compares to Michael Vick, a Heisman Trophy winner. Tons of things you should like. Doesn't fit every offense, but tons of things you should like if you are a bold and creative enough coach. The problem he's having right now is he's getting bad advice. And the reason he's getting bad advice is because his mother, who has no idea what she's doing, no connections within the NFL, is representing him. I had the same issue when University of Miami offensive lineman, whatever his name is, I can't remember his name. University of Miami offensive lineman, he went in the first round. He plays for the Giants now.
Eric Flowers.
Eric Flowers. I had the same issue with Eric Flowers. I specifically spoke to Eric Flowers about what's going on in regards to, and he went in the first round, mind you, because he was a rare talent who hasn't exactly panned out, and that's another thing. An agent would help him pan out, but it did not go well when I expressed that to him. These young men, while you want to haggle over the 3%, trust me, when you drop into the second round, which is where Lamar is about to drop, and you lose the equivalent of maybe $6 million, how big is that 3% when you lose $6 million?
Huge. Gigantic. I mean, well, you know, not gigantic in that sense, but it's a gigantic loss.
When teams are literally, they were laughing at him while his pro day was televised live.
Jeez.
Now they won't say, I watched the whole thing. They won't sit there and at the end Bucky Brooks will come out and say all of his grades. I taped the 1 minute clip of Bucky Brooks laughing at him and saying, I've never seen that ever before in a pro day. And when his pro day was arguably one of the worst I've seen, Teddy Bridgewater's was pretty bad as well. And it just is what it is. I like the kid. I want to push for him. I want to advocate for him. He's not a good fit for Miami, but I think he can be successful in the NFL if he sits and he learns for 2 years. I'm not 1,000% sure he's a first-round talent, and neither is anybody else in the NFL. And what a good agent can do is drive your market up to convince a team, you know what, because of this fifth-year option, because of your offense, Pittsburgh Steelers, you have the 30th pick in the draft. I'm just guessing. I know they're down there. Why not invest in a future quarterback for Ben Roethlisberger? Why not? And sell it to the Pittsburgh Steelers executives. Now, is his mom going to do that for him?
She can try.
She can try, but does she have the connections?
No.
Does she have the trust? Does she have, you know, and I feel, I know that the game is rigged. You don't know it. The fan public doesn't know it. But people who really cover the league and people inside the league, they know it. There are people in this league that can tell you all 32 first-round picks an hour before the draft. It's sickening. It's disturbing. Most of them are agents with big firms. They've got 8 first-round picks, and they could tell you who slotted with who, narrow it down to the top to the 3, and they have so much influence, the CAAs of the world, that yes, they can tell you what the first round of the draft is going to look like. And what this young man doesn't know is he doesn't know what he doesn't know, and unfortunately, it's going to cost him. Now, will it cost him in the long run? Probably not, because ultimately his talent should trump everything, and he will be selected. He will have the opportunity. He will be somebody's number 2. If the quarterback ahead of him struggles or gets injured, he will have his opportunity, and I'm sure that's all that matters to him. However, the equivalent of being a first-rounder where you're making, let's say, $11 million, not including your fifth-year option, and being a second-rounder where you're making $6 million over the next 4 years is huge, massive, and he shouldn't jeopardize that over trying to save 3%.
We're talking with Omar Kelly, covers the Miami Dolphins and the NFL for the South Florida Sun Sentinel. And speaking of quarterbacks, Omar, now being up at the owners' meetings, you were up close and personal when Adam Gase said a lot of very nice things about Baker Mayfield. How real is that, Omar? Is there a little smoke screen in there, or does Gase really love Baker that much?
He's a horrible poker player. I taped the whole thing. It's there if you want to go look at it on the Sun Sentinel website. His face lights up when he starts talking about Baker Mayfield. He can't hide the fact that that's his quarterback.
Wow.
That's who he would like. And you covered Adam Gase long enough to know what his real personality is, not the one that
Yeah, the one that we see when a couple times a year we get those off the record conversations. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
And he is him and Baker Mayfield. That I joked in a column that I wrote. They are like stepbrothers. You know the scene from Step Brothers where they go, "Did we just become best friends?"
Yes.
I swear to you, that had to be the interaction between Baker Mayfield and Adam Gase when they met each other at the Senior Bowl. They probably were just like, "Did we just become best friends?" So yes, it's so real. The problem is Adam Gase and everybody in the Dolphins know that if they want Baker Mayfield, they have to trade up and probably have to trade up tremendously high because the odds of him getting out of the top five are very slim.
And okay, would that make sense given the situation the Dolphins have and the needs that they have? Can they be in a position where they're trading up and giving up assets to be early enough to draft Mayfield?
No, it wouldn't be a smart move, especially when you consider I recently wrote in a column that's actually going to appear in the Sun Sentinel tomorrow. I'm sensing the clock has begun on this regime, this organization. Steve Ross's second VP of football operations, his third GM and his third head coach. I'm sensing, you know, how you play chess and you push that clock down. I believe based on Steve Ross's tone and how annoyed he seemed and came off at this year's NFL owners meeting.
Yeah, you know, I wanted to ask you about that because I saw some comments that he made written. So the context is never quite the same about how, about him saying that, you know, certainly I questioned why we're getting rid of these players, but then at the end of the day, I have to understand it. What did you take there reading between the lines?
I shot the whole thing on video. You could watch it, and you could watch his tone. You could watch his tone, and it's kind of like Mike Tannenbaum's talking, and he's like, all right, when is he going to finish? It's clearly an annoyance. He's clearly I put it this way. He expressed a level of frustration that he's never expressed before. He's always been disappointed with how much he struggled as an NFL owner. But this is unreal to me in terms of the way that he was just like, man, I'm a failure at this. It's not that I have been bad. No, I'm a failure at this. And this is probably one of the only things that I've failed. Now, keep in mind that he has, in the 10 years that I've covered him since he's been the Dolphins owner, Steve Ross has tripled his net worth.
Wow.
From $4.4 billion to $12 billion. So think about somebody who can triple their net worth from $4.4 billion to $12 billion, no matter what he does, not being a success at the thing that he actually enjoys and finds fun.
That's bizarre. So it's like, how do you measure success? Do you measure it by no Super Bowls, no playoff wins, or can you look and say, you know what? Since I came into ownership of this product, I'm worth three times what I was worth before. That just goes to show you, Omar, football is like nothing else. The fact that you can triple your net worth and still think of yourself as a failure, it's very ironic.
Yeah, and he started ownership because he wanted the challenge. It just seemed like, you know, he'd been working to become a pro owner since the USFL days. So he finally acquired this and he was going to show everybody how you could put all these tools and real estate to great success and become a successful NFL owner. And lo and behold, here we are a decade later and he's a failure. And he's like, man, it's quite humbling and quite disappointing. Mm. And I think the problem that he's had is that, he doesn't know what to do and doesn't know who to listen to and, you know, puts the organization in the hands of people that he trusts and even they don't deliver for him. And now it's like, okay, well, we had a great deal of success. Now, why are we having this tremendous amount of failure right now?
Omar Kelly from the South Florida Sun Sentinel joins us. Omar, in Mel Kiper's latest mock draft, he's got Derwin James, Florida State safety, going to the Dolphins. That make any sense to you?
Yeah, it does. In fact, I wrote something right now up on the Sun Sentinel website. To me, you could say a lot of things about what the Dolphins need And I'm sure there's a lot of validity to anything that you put out as a position.
Mm-hmm.
But in my mind, and you know how I cover the team, the number one need for the Dolphins is a free safety.
Oh, wow.
And
well, I can understand because you've got two strong safeties. I still look at linebacker to me as being more glaring. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
But see, listen to my plan here. Listen to my plan.
Okay.
You know T.J. McDonald. You know how big he is. He's about 230 pounds.
Yeah.
He's fluid. He's athletic. You know, even though he's 230, he can run. My plan would be to move him to the weak side linebacker spot, have him move down into the box, even if it's just a nickel package where two linebackers are on the field, and get a real free safety, get a Ron Parker, get a Eric Reed, get a Kenny Vaccaro, or even trade for Earl Thomas, and you kill two birds with one stone. You get a player who's a better complement with Rashad Jones. Primarily, Ron Parker will be the top of my list. You get a player, Ron Parker can play the nickel. He can play the cornerback position. He can play the free safety position. He's got a ton of versatility, and he's made a ton of plays throughout the past 5 years. Why he was cut from Kansas City is just the regular shakedown that NFL teams do. He was making too much money, $6 million. They wanted to take a pay cut. He was like, nah, I would rather chance being in the market. But what he didn't realize is that, like all the other safeties didn't realize, is that the market's flattened out because of the Earl Thomas deal. Everybody's waiting for Earl Thomas to be released. Waiting for Earl Thomas to be traded. When that happens, it'll free up the rest of the safety market because, as you can see, nobody has gotten a deal done. None of the starting free safeties have really gotten a deal done. So it's flattened out the market. That means players are going to take less. And this is the prime opportunity for the Dolphins to say what they claim they are about, which is to seize the opportunity to take advantage of a depressed market and go sign a good player and kill two birds with one stone. If I told you right now you could add a linebacker for $4 million that would fix your coverage needs and help you cover a tight end, would you do it?
Sign me up.
Okay. Well, I'm telling you right now, you could sign a safety and move T.J. McDonald to linebacker. It'll address your coverage issues. He already plays most of his career, if not 70%, in the box. Yeah, it's a different animal down there, but I would gamble that he's ready, capable, and willing to do it. Now, if you talk about the financial commitment, last year you had more money financially committed to the safety position because you had Rashad Jones, who just got a $60 million deal. You had T.J. McDonald, who you signed to a $26 million deal. And then you had Nate Allen, who was making $3 million a year. Then you had a Michael Thomas, who was making $1.8 million a year. So my point is, don't let your desire to be plain Jane or to stick to the vanilla ideas and concepts that you have limit you from what you can achieve in terms of fixing a lot of the problems that you have on your team or on your defense. So, you know, that's where I am. I know you need a linebacker. I know you need a defensive tackle. I know you need a tight end. But to answer your question, hey, Derwin James, I have him as one of the five players that I think could be the first round, could be the number 11 pick for the Dolphins.
Well,
I do.
Who are the other four?
Two linebackers, the one from Virginia Tech, the one from Georgia, Baker Mayfield, and then the safety from Alabama.
Okay.
So I have two safeties, two linebackers, and
Minka Fitzpatrick.
Yep.
Love it.
I just go by school number, school and number at this point.
He's Omar Kelly. Sorry to cut you off, but we're so up against it, Omar.
Yeah. No problem, bro.
Great stuff as always, my friend. Enjoy your weekend. He's Omar Kelly. Follow him on Twitter at Omar Kelly. Check out his work in the South Florida Sun Sentinel. The Alex Dono Show continues next here on WQAM.
Radio.com. Radio.com.
Look, I ain't got a force it. It's that youngest son of 30 on the Forbes list.
Now, what is this? I feel like the lyrics may be important, and I have no idea what's happening here with this song. What is this, Tito?
This is a remix of Kendrick Lamar's King is Dead with Joey Badass.
Who's Joey Badass?
He's another rapper.
Okay. I guess that's an okay
He's
name for a rapper.
He's a little more, I guess, off At 17, off-stream, not mainstream.
Gotcha. Yeah, because I've actually heard of Kendrick Lamar.
Yeah.
Never heard of this badass fellow. That's interesting. All right. By the way, since I have you on the mic there, I know you're a big-time Heat supporter like I am.
Absolutely.
Magic number is one. Heat can clinch a playoff spot tomorrow with either a victory or a Detroit loss. So where do you stand on potential first-round matchups? Now, it's out of our control at the end of the day. Like, whatever Tito or Dono wishes to happen, we have no control over the cosmos. But I would like a matchup with Cleveland in the first round.
Yeah, I think I heard you talk about this. I still think it's Boston. I think, one, for me personally, if there's a team I genuinely hate, it's the Celtics. Like
I do despise the Celtics, but my pettiness and hatred towards LeBron, it's on another level.
Yeah, I can understand that too. So, yeah. But I think if you're talking long-term, you know, making an impression on the NBA with a team that a lot of people feel is overachieving than anything, I feel like making it to the second round and beating a Celtics team that is wounded, significantly wounded, I think that has a significant impact. But at the same time, I think, you know, like you said, you know, getting a first round series to finally see a Wade versus LeBron matchup.
Because you realize, like, if that doesn't happen,
we may never see it. Yeah,
it'll probably never happen.
Yeah, no, 100%.
And I've been waiting for that for a long time, right? Like, one of my life goals, and this will show you how petty I am, but one of my life goals, the day that LeBron James released that contrived, hokey Sports Illustrated letter, that very day, the first thought that popped in my head was, God, I hope we can meet this guy in the playoffs at some point, right? Even if we're like lambs heading to slaughter, right? Because obviously LeBron is 33 and he still is on top of his game. Like, it defies a lot. The amount of mileage on that man's body going to the finals every damn year, no decline to speak of at 33-year-old. It is what it is. Like, even if a playoff series against LeBron, presuming a healthy Kevin Love, it could be suicide heading into that playoff series, but I've been waiting since 2014 for this, and especially with Dwayne Wade, right? Because Dwayne Wade leaves, yeah, he the wayward son, he strayed, he went to Chicago, but he came back, prodigal son returns, all is right in the world. But I had been waiting, oh, I would love to get Wade versus LeBron in the playoffs. If it doesn't happen this year, it'll probably never happen.
No, you're 1,000% right. It probably will never happen if it doesn't happen this year.
Real quick, one of the coolest stories in sports this week, period, is that of the emergency goalie for the Chicago Blackhawks. You may be asking, why should I care about that? I'm in South Florida. Why do I care about the emergency Blackhawks goalie? It's a great story. So the Chicago Blackhawks emergency goalie, who played about 14 minutes against the Winnipeg Jets last night because both of their top goaltenders went down. They had the first time ever an emergency backup goalie ever got ice time. It nearly happened in Florida 3 years ago when Luongo and Al Montoya both got hurt in the same game. The emergency goaltender was the goaltending coach, Rob Tallis, nearly went in, but Luongo actually drove back from the hospital to go back in the game. So it almost happened there, but it happened last night for Chicago. And this emergency goalie, 36-year-old accountant, I mean, how crazy is that? 36-year-old accountant Scott Foster stopped 7 shots, didn't give up any goals in 14 minutes of ice time. That is a phenomenal story. Like, that's not the kind of thing you expect to hear about in the NHL. Like, just how loony would it be, you know, if the Dolphins are so in need of linebacker depth, they have to pull an accountant out of the stands, like, to play Sam linebacker next year. Like, that's the equivalent of this. And this man is a 36-year-old accountant, which busiest time of year, by the way, to be an accountant.
Donna, we're pulling Dan Marino if we need it. I mean, we're going to pull our guy that we've ran with the most, and it's got to be Dan Marino.
That'd be our emergency quarterback for sure. But here's where the story gets weird. Darren Revelle dug this up. $0. That's what the Blackhawks had to pay Scott Foster, the accountant, who is the first emergency backup goalie to ever get ice time. Last night, Foster saved 7 shots on 7 tries, 14 minutes of action, but the collective bargaining agreement states that Foster's deal with the team was a quote-unquote tryout. Now, Darren Revelle tweeted, $0 is what the Blackhawks had to pay Scott Foster. I'm willing to bet they compensated him in some way for that. just because they didn't have to pay him anything. I mean, a 36-year-old accountant goes out there and stops seven shots when he should be filing people's taxes last night. I can guarantee you the Blackhawks found a way to take care of the guy, whether it be like a free vacation somewhere, throw him a couple of bucks under the table, buy him dinner. Like they had to have found a way to take care. This is too big of a story for them not to compensate the guy.
Free lunch.
Yeah, there you go. Well, you take one of those Italian beef sandwiches or deep dish pizzas that Doug Plagans loves so much. 8 o'clock hour of the Alex Dono Show. 9 o'clock. It was the 8 o'clock hour. 9 o'clock hour coming up. We'll have clickbait later this hour, including the war on cargo shorts is real, people. We continue next year on QAM.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.